Welcome back to the Border Patrol. Let's talk baseball with Mike McFarland. What's up, Mac? How are you?
Let's talk baseball.
You want to talk weather at all? Since Gary didn't?
No.
Okay, great.
No, I said, damn. Jake. I said, you got Gary off there within a half hour, so I got more than like 3 minutes to talk.
Let me tell you something. Gary was told he wasn't happy about it. I don't want you to think that he was thrilled to, you know, jump off the line there. But, Mac, we have to talk baseball with you. There's a lot of important things to talk about. And the first one, now listen, hey, it's the first week of the season. Let us all jump to conclusions, all right? That's the best thing to do. I'll give you the reasons why I'm asking this question. So Keller hasn't looked good in either start. The usage of the slider is down quite a bit from what the norm was last year. Nate will give you the numbers because he's our numbers guy, which means we're in deep trouble. And then Mike Boddicker, in between being grumpy when he was on the show this week, he said, and he first brought this up, is boy, he wasn't using his slider as much as he normally does in opening day, which could be an indication there might be some issues there. There might be some pain there. There might be some issues with his arm. And then, on top of all this, they push his start back a day when he already was going to have 5 days of rest, and they pushed it back from Wednesday to Thursday, and we saw what happened against the White Sox. So is this all just not a big deal, and we're looking for something that's not there? Or based on what you've seen and the way things have happened, do you have any level of concern at all about the health of Brad Keller?
Well, I'm just concerned about the elevation of his pitches. I mean, he's usually good at working down in the zone, but, you know, you saw the home runs hit on, kind of rolling curveballs yesterday. There was a little bit better life to his fastball, I thought. Had a little bit more movement. But, I heard Bod talking about, maybe something's sparking, maybe something's twinging. When we talked after his opening day start, that he was amped up. His velocity was fine. He was up in his zone. So, all right, give him a do-over. But, now you got to start looking at it and saying, okay, is there something going on? Now, he's still able to go out there every fifth day, then okay, we're fine. Give him that extra day to let him work on something. Maybe that was their reason to give him that extra day. But when I see his breaking ball rolling, there might be some validity to Bod's assessment that there might be something going on. He would know better than I. I'm back behind the plate. Get the bleeping pitch down. Let's go. And if it's something in his arm that isn't allowing him to get over that front side and get that good tilt down in a way and have some sweeping action to it, maybe there is something going on. I'm not on the conspiracy side just yet. He needs to get out of the middle, and you just don't see guys chasing the pitches like you usually do when he's throwing that little dart and cutting and sinking fastball that he usually has.
Yeah, so the numbers just through two games, he's throwing his slider, according to FanGraphs, he's throwing his slider 25% of the time, which last year he threw it 38% of the time. And then, like you said, those two home runs, those things were a hitter's dream, right, Mac? I mean, those were hanging breaking balls. And
right.
So, what do you, I guess if you're coming from a catcher's perspective, are there times when a pitcher just maybe doesn't have the bite on his breaking ball and he's got to work his way through it? Is that usually the sign of a problem? Can it be anywhere in between?
Well, you have to find one of the two. You need two extremes. Whether it's the fastball and the changeup or the fastball and the cutter, the breaking ball, you need something that's going to take him off the fastball, especially the way that it was getting tattooed. Now, Brett Saberhagen basically was a fastball changeup pitcher, but was able to locate, elevate when he wanted to, but for the most part worked himself down. And, I'm sure Cal Eldred's trying to go over some tapes and see some things that's going on as to why the fastball continues to be elevated and is his arm slot the same. I don't have the resources that they do that, the pitch is coming out with a breaking ball with a little extra hump in it and causing it to roll. It doesn't have quite the snap. opening day, we talked about, well, when you usually have a pitcher overthrowing, you tend to go more to his off-speed pitch because it forces him to get balanced over the rubber and allows him to get over the top side and work down in the zone. We didn't see that, so I don't know. I don't want to throw too much into it right now, but crying out loud, we sure as hell need him in order to make a run because, you know, not all that impressed with, you know, the Twins are playing well right now, but I think that White Sox team, especially with what is it, Jimenez,
right,
being out, they're vulnerable. They have two good arms. I was very impressed with Lance Lynn. Holy smokes, what a workhorse! That's something that that Keller should strive to be. Is that guy 200 innings and going out there and give me the damn ball? I got 100 pitches. I'll show these pitch count rookies on how you go out and finish a ball game. He was just magnificent. But, again, I think that White Sox team has some holes in it and can be pitched to. So I think this Central's wide open. We get Mondi back and Dozier finds his groove. We can get back to that good, solid lineup and be able to put runs up on anybody.
Mike McFarland's your guest. All right, Mike, let's talk about the bullpen. We talked about this quite a bit the last couple of days. And Petro talked about it yesterday as well, and I thought he asked it in an interesting way. If you were going to have, you know, your 7, 8, and 9 guys in defined roles, and maybe that never happens with this team. Maybe it's just maybe Mike Matheny doesn't want that, or more likely there's not guys that step up and claim those roles, right? So he's going to have to mix and match. But as far as the confidence level that you have in the guys that are out there, who are the guys that you would like to see, and not now, maybe by the All-Star break, turn into the ninth inning guy, the eighth inning guy, or whatever way you'd like to manage them based on the personnel? Who do you think emerges as the high-leverage guys that Mike Matheny can depend on?
Well, from the fact that I don't think he's given up a run in 2 years is Zimmer.
Yep.
I mean, he's just been unhittable. Now, do you throw him into a foreign situation and give him the ball at the back end? I would probably start working him, you know, seventh, eighth innings in close ball games to maybe groom him. Stomount's another guy that you can throw in there. And, you know, although Holland gave it up and Davis has been, you know, a little bit erratic, those guys are the ones that might be able to stem the tide until you give the chance to. I still like Hernandez. I mean, the kid just has some fuzz. The new lefty can come in. You can go closer by committee. But I think you got to start giving Zimmer, in my opinion, he's earned the right to get a shot at closing out the games or pitching in high leverage situations. So, you know, all those things will bear itself out depending on how things work here. But look, if you can go righty lefty or pitch to situations with 3-4 guys on any given, or two or three guys on any given night, give me that opportunity. But I got to go with Zimmer right now. He's shown it now, and okay, maybe last year it was blah blah blah. Well, he's come out and throwing the ball exceptionally well during the spring and very well right now.
And I like Barlow, and I think that he has. And I'm just curious, like what you think moving forward, because he's shown he can pitch the seventh, the eighth, he can pitch both. We talked to J.J. Piccolo yesterday, and he raved about Scott Barlow. That's a guy that gets overlooked sometimes, but I think certainly he has an important role moving forward in this bullpen, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, you go down there and you keep forgetting some of these young kids. You know, Barlow's been around for a bit. Explosive fastball, tremendous snap on his off-speed pitch. He's pitched in high leverage situations. Absolutely. So there's a multitude of guys that, you know, everyone wants to have that 100-mile-an-hour guy down in the bullpen, but we got some guys that throw mid to upper 90s that have some filthy hooks that go with it that can get the job done. So, yeah, they had a rough couple games there in Cleveland, but I'm still very high on this bullpen.
So it is interesting because all the guys that you listed, the younger guys that might have the bigger upside right now and the better stuff, don't have the experience. And then the two guys, Wade Davis and Greg Holland, that have the experience are, you know, they don't have the same stuff that they once did. How do you work guys that are younger into getting that experience? How do you find out if they have what it takes on the mental side to take on maybe greater responsibility?
April and May. I mean, that's pretty much it, April and May. Give me, Barlow and Brent, just let them go out and see what they got. Hans, got hit a little bit the last game in Cleveland, but still, if you're counting on Jacob Junis to be part of that, he could be your bridge guy in the sixth and seventh, fifth, sixth, seventh. He can throw those innings. The way he looked right now, one of the best starts that we've seen along with Duffy. So they're like, it's one of those things, Nate, everything works its way out in the first month, okay? Mm-hmm. A trend gets set, a pattern gets set from what you're seeing. There's always that little, okay, that's just one outing, okay, and then two outings. Well, two outings turn into four solid outings. Then when you start to get that in your mind, then you start switching things around and moving them into different roles in the bullpen. And I think one of the issues that Mike Matheny has had is the bullpen not necessarily knowing when and if they're coming in. You don't want guys on eggshells. Trust me, I've sat down in that bullpen on an off day, and those guys are just sitting, okay, well, what's he doing? What's he thinking? Hey, coach, what's he, talking to the bullpen coach, and the bullpen coach is popping Xanax trying to relax. He doesn't necessarily know. trying to answer all these questions. So the sooner that, you get the communication level going with these guys, they can start getting themselves mentally prepared to go into a ball game from the fifth inning on.
Okay, so you referenced there that things shake themselves out a lot of times in April and May, and you also mentioned what a start Jacob Junis had when he went out there, was supposed to be, I don't know if an opener is the right word, but he was only supposed to go a couple of innings, and he ends up going five and doing great. Mike Matheny says they need another starter by next week. Has he put himself in that? Has he forced their hand in that position, or do you still like him as more of a swing guy?
Oh, he earned it, in my opinion. Go and turn on the damn tape and watch the action on that ball. And I'm sure they're discussing it, but in my opinion, the guy's earned it. Look at, you can look at it along the same ways. Junis comes in and doesn't exactly know his role. Nicky Lopez, I need to hit in the spring training. I need to hit, and here's Nicky swinging the bat well. Jacob Junis goes out and shoves in his first start against the Cleveland Indians. Both of those guys are starting to get reevaluated when it comes to their roles on this team and in the future. So I give Junis absolutely another start. He sure as hell earned it, in my opinion.
Mike McFarlane is our guest. And so Mac mentioned the White Sox. You think they could be a little vulnerable? But it's important for the Royals to do something against them head-to-head. What was the record against the White Sox last year, Nate?
1-10.
It was god-awful. So you can't let that continue to snowball. I mean, like, when that gets in your head or whatever, that becomes something that's, like you said, two or three good starts can turn into four or five, six good starts or whatever, then you're on a roll. That's that could be an issue if you feel like one team's got your number and if they feel like it too, right?
Yeah, well, throughout my career, early on it was the Bash brothers in Oakland, and we walked out on the field and you're just trying to survive. And then later on it was during the Cleveland Indians run in the 90s when they were just on a roll, and it was just like everything we threw, they smoked. Every ball you hit hard, they ran down. One of those things that you walk into the park and think that something extraordinary is going to have to happen in order for you to get a win. They're going to have an off day. Our pitcher's going to have his best day pitching, and we're going to have to get an error and a bloop and a blast and win the ball game. You tend to get up for those games because you want to start proving yourself against them and remove that seed of doubt that they can just throw their hats out on the field and know that they're going to win a ball game. But this is a different team now, especially with Anderson being out of the lineup. you know, you still got Abreu and Moncada, but again, you can pitch around Moncada. You can get a lot of swing and misses out of him. You don't let Abreu pitch it, beat you. And then again, Grandal, it isn't like he's, you know, the salvia of the American League, one of the best hitting catchers. There's holes in that lineup. You know, their pitching staff is very good. You got to understand that. But still, you want to go out and prove yourself against them. And I know the guys are. They're not going out there with a defeatist attitude. You know, not with Witt leading the lineup and getting ready to snap some heads. But he's just ready to go. You got to take that seed of doubt out of some of these young players' minds that went through this last year. That these guys owned you. It's a new time and a new age. You know, it finally took us a while to break through against the Yankees when they were in their power, their power mode, and went out and win 2 out of 3 in a series, and that can get you on a good roll because feeling good and kind of broke the ownership of a team you just played.
And Mac, before I let you go, I hate to complain, but all I want to do is watch the Royals. Why do they have another effing off game today? Off day. Honey, how many off days you need the first week? Mac, what the hell?
I get it, the scheduling part, you know, I really do. But come on, it can't be that hard. You know, well, if you're playing in the warm weather in the spring, then you're going to play in the extremely hot weather in the summer. Which would you rather have? The warm weather in the spring, that's what I'd rather have. And everyone has been saying that since the dawn of time. But they got these algorithms. They got this. They got those Yale economists saying this is the best advantageous thing to make the schedule work, and it's equitable for everybody. Screw that. If you're in a dome, you host the first 2 weeks and go from there. If you're in Florida, L.A., Texas,
Arizona.
Play ball.
Thank you,
Mac. Play ball. That's all I want.
If you're in Toronto, just play in Florida, which is what they do.
There you go. Thank you, Mac.
Oh, dear Lord. Those poor guys. I know. Have a good weekend, boys.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
I just want to watch them play. That's all. Yeah, big deal.
You need all these off days.
Nope.
You know, make sure that you don't build up any momentum early in the season, and then later in the season, you don't have any off days when guys are tired.
We'll be back after this on WHB.